Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports. Brought to you by the WBO, the World Boxing Organization.
Pedro, let me say congratulations on your long time in radio. You are your team and for your ratings, man. I was reading about that. I'm very impressed with you, Pedro.
And now, the host of the longest running fight show in radio and internet history.
I don't want to predict this fight, but, you know, I'm going to promise that I can give a good fight, you know, to make people happy, and I just do my best.
Pedro Fernandez.
If I can't teach you one way, I'll teach you another, but I'm going to get the job done.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen, live worldwide, coming to you, yes, again, from the multi-million dollar Sports Byline Studios. Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. 35, no, make that 36 plus years now of knocking people out, knocking out all bums, often imitated but never duplicated. Here I sit high atop my throne. Who am I? My name is Pedro Fernandez. Welcome to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, the longest running fight show in this combat sports show in history. Straight up, we're going to talk boxing, MMA for an hour. Of course, this is the Saturday edition live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM Satellite, of course, Channel 211, like a plethora of another internet platforms. Straight up. And, of course, SB Nation Sports as well. We'll bring in the PhD of boxing about 20 minutes past the hour. I will go through the career of Jerry Corey. Jerry Corey's birthday was May 15th. Of course, Jerry Corey died, I think, in 1996 at the age of 53. And I interviewed him a couple years before, and we had some good times and some bad times. I mean, as far as watching him fall apart, you know, from the pugilistic dementia. That's right. He got hit too much. I mean, the guy started boxing at the age of 5. He was taking shots at the age of 5. You know, by the age of 12, he was boxing competitively. His father, well, that's a story all in itself. But bottom line is we're talking Corey's in this first segment after the break on Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You are tuned to the longest running fight show in history, Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Open phone lines around the planet. You can join me if you dare. 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. Get this. The guilt-free, no commitment text line, 415-275-1613. The text line, once again, 415-275-1613. You're tuned to Ring Talk live on Sports Byline.
Here comes the decision now. Let's listen.
Clarity in the world of professional boxing is spelled WBO. That's right, the World Boxing Organization is boxing's only transparent, sanctioned body. You can follow the WBO on Facebook or check out their website, WBOboxing.com. That's WBOboxing.com. The World Boxing Organization.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Time to talk Great White Hope. Of course, Jerry Corey, that's what he was, 53-9, 4 draws, 32 KOs. Of course, an undefeated heavyweight based in L.A., Bellflower, California, down there in L.A., the L.A. area. Of course, his father was Jack Corey, a hard dude. Had like Larry Merchant said, he had hard luck tattooed on his knuckles. I mean, his rationale for boxing was you had to work a week to make $3, but you can make $3 in one fight. Right, you know, having one fight. So bottom line, his father said, you guys are going to box, you're going to make some money. Of course, the Corey brothers, there were several of them. Mike Corey, of course, the most prominent, besides Jerry, was a light heavyweight contender, got knocked out on a card with Jerry Corey. Of course, he was going after the light heavyweight championship, held then by Bob Foster up in, I think, Lake Tahoe, Nevada. Muhammad Ali was in the main event against Jerry Corey. Of course, Muhammad would cut Jerry up and stop him on cuts. The most Jerry Corey ever made in his life, the Great White Hope, $338,000 for the Ali comeback, I believe, in 1970. Of course, that was in Atlanta, GA, when Governor Lester Maddox decided the cracker that he was, the redneck that he was, said, I'll let him fight here. That draft dodger, I'll let him fight here. Yeah, well, he needed the Negro vote. That's why he let him fight there. But at the end of the day, that was where Ali made his comeback. And, of course, that was the comeback opponent, Jerry Corey. Now, Jerry and I saw him in the gym in San Francisco a couple of different times. I remember when he was, I guess he was a young kid. I had to be like 11 or 12, something like that, and watching him spar with Eddie Machen. And what's funny about Eddie Machen was Eddie Machen was a guy that brought me into boxing, but Eddie Machen handed him his first loss. So this is all like, you know, coming together, right? So I'm watching him spar with Eddie Machen, and his father's in the corner, and his father, Jack Corey, I'll mention him several times. Not the nicest guy in the world. Died at the age of 82, but not the nicest guy in the world. He outlived Jerry by, I think, 15 years. But at the end of the day, he was just a rough, tough dude. Didn't believe in headgears. I mean, his guys would spar without headgears. It was like riding a motorcycle without a helmet. I mean, you know, just adding to it. Anyway, there's no quitting the quarry. That's what he kept saying. There's no quitting the quarry. There's no quitting the quarry. That was always the old man's line. There's no quitting the quarry. Well, there was no quitting the quarry. And Jerry Corey, of course, had an illustrious career besides that, you know, the loss to Eddie Machen early on. Some people call that a learning loss, but the bottom line is I think it was in 1966. But he came up here around 68 or 69. 68, I think I saw him spar with Machen in 68. Of course, Machen coming to the end of his career and, of course, the end of his life. Circa 1970. But at the end of the day, Jerry Corey was fought everybody. I mean, I can go through this. Muhammad Ali, Mac Foster, Joe Frazier, Ron Lyle, Ernie Shavers, Ken Norton. Lorenzo Zanon was a decent fighter. I mean, he fought, but who'd he end his career with? A guy named Ron Kramer. That was the saddest thing I think I've ever dealt with. Because I'll tell you, me and Jerry are together, we're at the Forum Club, and it's probably about, I'm doing TV down there, I would figure about 1991. And I see Jerry. I say, hey, Jerry, what's up? I grab my tape recorder, went over there. I said, you know, let's talk, this and that. And it was sort of cool is that when I was talking to him, you could hear the ice cubes circling around in his glass. He was moving the ice cubes around in his glass. And it was sort of like Nixon. Listen to the Watergate tapes. You know, Nixon drunk as a skunk there in the Oval Office, moving around those ice cubes when he was on those Watergate tapes. So I was checking out Jerry Corey. You know, we're back and forth and we're talking. We're having a good rapport. So I said, let's go on tape. Let's interview something. Let's do something. Okay. So I said, okay. So I turned on the tape recorder. Now, we're in the Forum Club, and the Forum Club is a bar at the L.A. Forum. I don't know if it's still there, the Forum Club, but it was a bar, of course. It was a place that Jerry, the great Jerry Buss, who owned the L.A. Lakers, that's where he threw a lot of his big-time parties. That's where I saw Viagra for the first time. These rich men were passing out this blue pill. I couldn't figure it out. I was a young dude. What are they passing around? They were passing around this big blue pill. Looked like a diamond. I couldn't figure it out. And a couple years later, I realized it was Viagra. But they had rich people getting stuff before the poor folks. Anyway, back to Jerry Corey. So Jerry and I are at the Forum, and he's had a couple of drinks, and I asked him, you know, are you drinking any alcohol? And he said, are you drinking these days? He said, no, I'm not drinking. And he's moving the ice cubes around in the glass. I said, you know, that smells like an alcoholic beverage. I mean, that's what I said on the radio. I mean, I'm taping him. And this went out over the radio. I said, Jerry, it smells like an alcoholic beverage to me. And he said, oh, no, I'm not drinking. But I am going to come back. And I said, you're going to come back? Yes, I'm going to come back. So, you know, I said, I really don't think that's a good idea, man. I said, not too many people, I think, that love you and know you would think that's a good thing to do at this point in time, 1990, 1991. He said to me, no, I'm going to come back. So he can't get a license anywhere in the country except for Colorado. Colorado, they would let anybody have a boxing license there. Myself, Scott Cuddy, anybody can get a boxing license in that place, okay? All you do is show up and pay the money. So anyway, he shows up to fight a guy by the name of Ron Kramer. Now, well, I drank, take a drink of water here. Ron is a formidable foe. He has a record of 3 wins, 4 losses, and 1 draw. In other words, he couldn't lick a stamp if you wet his tongue, right? And he beat the snot out of Jerry Corey. I don't think... there's no quitting the quarry. Yeah, there is no quitting the quarry because Jerry Corey took a beating that night. I watched some of the films. I had to turn it off after about 5 minutes. That's how long it took me to realize, you know what, this is really, I knew it was a bad idea going in, but watching that tape, somebody sent me a VHS tape, and I almost wanted to cry because here was a guy that in 1970, I guess 78 or 79, maybe about 1980, I saw him in the LAX, at the LAX airport, okay? And he was reading the New York Times. I thought that was a little impressive, you know, a boxer reading the New York Times. But he wasn't reading it, he was doing a crossword puzzle. And supposedly the crossword puzzle in the New York Times is somewhat difficult. Well, he could knock it out in 15 minutes. Jerry Corey could knock this New York Times. I mean, like, whoa, blow me away. Words had a great, I guess he had an incredibly vast vocabulary if he could knock that crossword puzzle out, or he was just damn good at crossword puzzles. At the end of the day, Jerry knocked that puzzle out, and I was just blown away by it. And, of course, that was 1980. I think he had obviously seen his better days and as a boxer, but we're in LAX, and he was friendly. And I remember he took a picture. I don't know where it went now, but he took a picture with those Kodachrome 126 Instamatic cameras and that kind of good stuff. But he was affluent. He still had a couple of bucks. I mean, he wasn't poor. He could talk. He could rationalize. He could go back and forth. As I said, he was doing the crossword puzzle. And then I saw him, as I said, in 91, and he had a couple of drinks, and he wasn't looking too good. Okay. And then, of course, in 92, he had the fight with Ron Kramer. That is, again, the saddest day, I think, one of the saddest days in boxing history. It took place in Aurora, Colorado. Jerry would last the decision. It lasted the route. I think it went an 8-round decision. But, you know, if you looked at this tape and you knew Jerry Corey, you wanted to cry. At the end of the day, of course, Corey would pass away from pugilist dementia. Of course, taking those shots early on. Born in 1945, died in 1999 at the age of 53 years old. Good fighter, debuted in 1965. Of course, lost that early decision. Had 14 fights in a year, I think. And they rushed him. There's no doubt about it. Jack Corey, his father, rushed him. If ever there was a guy that maybe was a bit of a... Oh, God, I don't want to talk to those. Yeah, okay. If ever was a guy that was just ill-suited for boxing, it was Jack Corey. Because I think that he pushed his sons a little bit too far. And sometimes, you know, Jerry never said he never wanted to box. So if you never wanted to box and you were forced into boxing or compelled to box because your father wanted you or told you to or had made you, I just feel that's not the real reason to box. It just isn't. No doubt about it. If you want to box, it's got to be in your blood, but you've got to want it. You've got to want it. Jerry Corey, at the end of the day, he didn't want it. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live worldwide on Sports Byline. Boxing's 2 PhD, Socrates Palmer, after the break.
I don't know, I'm so scared and lonely all at the same time.
Everyone says, I wish I was in your shoe, I wish I was in your shoe. The people, the hundreds of people that wish they were in my shoe don't know the hint of it. If they were in my shoe, they would cry like babies.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Mike Tyson, of course, last fought in 2005 against Kevin McBride. He got beaten up by Kevin McBride. I could have beat Kevin McBride that day. I'm telling you, I could have licked him like a stamp. This was the most one-dimensional, talentless heavyweight I've ever seen in my life. Talking about Kevin McBride, and Mike Tyson lost to him. He quit like a dog. I can hear him barking still. Of course, that was the MCI Center in the nation's capital back, I think, June 11th, 2005. That's when I asked Leila Ali, hey, what about you fighting Ann Wolf? And she said, who? I said, you know, that's sort of like your dad saying not knowing who George Foreman was. She didn't like that too much. Bottom line is, that was a hell of a day, of course, June 11, 2005. But that was the last time Mike Tyson was seen actually boxing in a ring. Now, I know he has a date with All Elite Wrestling or All, whatever, AEW. I can't remember. Is it All Elite? I think it's All Elite. Anyway, AEW Wrestling is going to do a pay-per-view with them in a couple of weeks, but I don't expect him to be doing anything outside of choreographed work there. But he wants to come back at the age of 53 and fight. And, you know, to me, I don't know. I'm going to go to the boxing PhD on this one because he's the guy that really knows boxing per se. Mr. Socrates Palmer, the man with the greatest name in the entire world, welcome to the show. Good afternoon to you. And Mike Tyson wants to come back. He hasn't fought since, like, in 15 years.
Good afternoon, Pedro. What can I say? Not that many 53-year-olds look like Mike Tyson. He seems to be taking care of himself these days. He's in the right place. I'm sure that at the end of the day, it's about money and setting up his future. He's got young kids, he's got a young wife, and maybe just misses the spotlight, you know, and think about it. The world right now, it's kind of like perfect timing. I mean, the world is basically on pause, and, you know, even if you're a casual boxing fan or a casual sports fan, you know, if you're a certain age, you know who Mike Tyson is. And Mike Tyson hitting the mitts is creating a buzz, and, you know, if he's matched up the right way, why not? You know, and at the end of the day, you know, it's, he's earned the right to call his shots, you know, and I don't think Mike is going to do it in a half-assed way. It seems like he's really taking things serious, and I hope it happens, as long as it's, you know, within reason.
Yeah, within reason. So what are you trying to say? I mean, how do you get a
I don't want to see him against Deontay Wilder.
How do you get him a work fight? How do you get Mike Tyson a work fight? What do you do? I mean, you want me? Well, time out. These guys are the guys that, you know, the guys that he was doing the work fights with, and I'll go back and I'll bring some names to you. James Ferguson, Mike Jameson, down here from San Jose, California. David Jaco, who I hang with on Facebook. Mark Young, Sammy Scaff. All these guys are retired or done. Sterling Benjamin, he's done. Lorenzo Cannati, he's done. What I'm trying to tell you is, where are you going to find somebody that Mike Tyson can beat?
Well, the irony, one of the guys that beat him last, Danny Williams, is actually still fighting. He fought a few months ago. You know, so right in that, you know, that was the day that Mike, I believe, injured his knee. You know, so that's right there. That's a storyline in itself.
Time out. Danny Williams still fighting. Of course, that was 2004. I know he beat Mike Tyson by unanimous decision in 2004.
He's not winning.
In Louisville, Kentucky. But he's 54-28. He's been stopped 15 times with 41 KOs. Man, is there ever a guy that needs to retire or what? He won fight. But guess what? The guy that he fought the last time was Nate Mehmet Kamalik. You know what Mehmet's record was? Ready for this one?
Lay it on me, sir.
0-8. Yeah. Anyway, bottom line is, let's talk back to Mike Tyson. He was a force on, he's been in the WWE Hall of Fame, so he's a bit of a social media star, has his Instagram thing. I mean, when he posts something every once in a while and it's serious, I take a look at it. I mean, I do, I'll take a look at it. I mean, gone, I think, are the days of the pigeons, but he says he really wants to fight again. But, I mean, all right, I'm going to go through the heavyweight. I'm going to go through these heavyweight ratings here. And do you? Are any guys? Do you really think there are guys that he could beat in today's heavyweight top 20? Probably.
About the heavyweight division, probably not. You know, probably not. But the thing is about the heavyweight division, all it takes is, you know, the one punch. You know, now there's Mike. Back in the day, was a smallish heavyweight. Now, he would look like a cruiserweight. Like compared to a lot of these monster heavyweights. I mean, you got guys like Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder, Anthony Joshua. I mean, these guys are monsters. I mean, it would not be a fair fight, you know, and it's almost two weight classes different. So, you know, which I would think would be a barn burner fight, and I think it can happen.
The fourth fight
with the Chisora.
No,
that would be a great fight.
No, I'm thinking Holyfield.
But I thought they were friends. They're on tour together. He's on Mike's podcast. It's all lovey-dovey. I don't want to see them, you know, trying to hurt each other.
That's the fight that's probably going to happen, Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield, because that's where the money's at, and, of course, the bite fight and all that kind of good stuff. And, of course, Mike would love to come back. And I think that Mike, you know, when he's straight, when he isn't crazy, when he isn't juiced up, per se, he really takes boxing and its history seriously. I mean, he's like a boxing – talk about a boxing PhD. He's like he really knows his stuff. I mean, he can go back and quote Henry Armstrong dates and all that kind of good stuff and Jack Johnson dates and Stanley Ketchel and this. So he's really a boxing historian. So I'm not of the opinion that he would try to that he would be inclined to come back and totally embarrass himself if he thought there was a possibility. You know what I'm saying? I just don't think so. So I think given the right opponent, and I think Holyfield's a perfect opponent. I mean, Holyfield retired 44-10, of course, with a couple of draws. Mike Tyson retired 50-6. Of course, Tyson lost the two fights to Holyfield, the one fight to Douglas. I mean, but he lost to Williams, and, you know, I mean, that lost the fight to Danny Williams. The losing to Danny Williams, I was there. That was in Louisville, Kentucky. That was a sad, sad night for boxing, man. I mean, I just went back to my two-star hotel room and, like, chilled.
Was Jeff Fennick in his corner in that fight?
I don't remember. Fennick, another guy that got screwed by the boxing establishment. Had he been given that decision against Azuma Nelson on the, I think it was the Ray Leonard, Tommy Hearns 2 card in 1989, had he been given that decision against Azuma Nelson, they called it a draw, I think his career would have went differently, because after that, Fennick got screwed over. Of course, he played a blackjack, and they ended up saying, no, you've only got 17. And they gave the draw to Azuma Nelson and let Azuma keep the title. And, of course, Jeff Fennick was never the same. Went into cocaine, went into this, went into that. But the bottom line is the boxing establishment got him. Now, speaking of the boxing establishment, I think they would welcome Mike Tyson's comeback with open arms.
Oh, I think they would, too. I mean, listen, regardless, Mike Tyson is one of the biggest names in sports, period. I'm talking about LeBron James, Tiger Woods, in that stratosphere. And at his peak, he's bigger than both of them put together. You know, so, of course. And, you know, like you said, Mike is a historian. I think he knows his place in history. I think he has a deep respect for the sport of boxing. I don't think he's going to make a fool of himself. And he's, like I said, he's got young kids. I'm sure he doesn't want, he's got that pride, that manly pride, and I don't think he's going to go out like a chump. And, you know, I would like to see him succeed. Just like a lot of people in and around my age group, I'm 42, Mike Tyson was a superhero. You know, he's something out of a comic book, you know, at his peak.
Won the title on
video games. Yeah.
Yeah. Won the title on November 22nd, 1986, of course, against Trevor Burbick, stopped him in two at the Las Vegas Hilton. I was standing in line for that fight, never actually got in. Beat James Bone Crusher Smith, Pinklin Thomas, Tony Tucker, Tyrell Biggs, Larry Holmes. Of course, said Larry came back for the building. I told you why Larry came back for that, right? He wanted to buy this building in Eastern Pennsylvania. It cost $3.5 million. And he said, where am I going to get $3.5 million? He went to Don King. He says, I need $3.5 million. He says, if you fight Mike Tyson, I'll give you $3.5 million. That's exactly how it went down.
Wow.
Okay.
Does he still own that building?
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know what he was telling me? The last time I talked to him, he told me that things weren't going all that well financially for Larry. He sort of gave me an impression that things weren't going all that well for him financially. And, of course, he put a lot of his money in real estate. I don't know what that means. Anyway, Tony Tubbs, of course, Michael Spencer was a brawl. You know, what do they call it? Once and for all, I called it once and I'll fall. Because he got hit once and it was all over. Of course, Spinks coming in at 31-0, took on Frank Bruno, Carl the Truth Williams. Torres took 2 seconds longer to make a liar out of Carl the Truth Williams than it did to make a believer out of Michael Spinks. In other words, 93 seconds versus 91 seconds. But that was the end, per se. And that's what he told me, that basically it came to an end in 1989, that his zenith was in and his peak was in. He hadn't had it since he told me this in 2005. So he lost to Buster Douglas, fought Henry Tillman, made Henry scared the hell out of Henry. Anyway, first round. And then he made Alex Stewart sort of commit a natural act, but not a natural act, standing up in a boxing ring right before the national anthem. And people were saying, what's that smell? What's that smell? Anyway, Alex Stewart got knocked out in one round. Donovan Ruddock, of course, he had the first fight with Razor Ruddock. That was a big controversy when referee Richard Steele made an inappropriate stop. And it wasn't an inappropriate stop of the fight. It was an inappropriate stop of the mechanics in which he did it. I thought his mechanics were poor.
Right.
Had he done it in another manner, I thought it would have been all right. Of course, he would come back and win a 12-round decision against Razor Ruddock in a rematch. Then he would be off for 4 years, come back and take on Peter McNeely. Of course, that was a fight Don King and I worked on day and night. Don had me working 19, 20 hours a day. I told you what his schedule was like, right? He would get up he would go to bed like at 4 o'clock in the morning and get up at 6:30.
Wow.
No. Every night.
And
I didn't take naps. And you know what he went to bed with? Whiskey.
Wow.
Stick around, one more segment. Of course, we're talking with the boxing PhD, Mr. Socrates Palmer. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, open phone lines around the planet. You can join us if you like. 1 800 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. Or the guilt-free, no-commitment text line, 415-275-1613. This is my brother, Rick Stevens. You are still a young man.
You're still a young man.
Decision now. Let's listen.
Clarity in the world of professional boxing is spelled WBO. That's right. The World Boxing Organization is boxing's only transparent sanctioned body. You can follow the WBO on Facebook or check out their website, WBOboxing.com. That's WBOboxing.com. The World Boxing Organization.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Oh, that is awesome.
You know, if Socrates wasn't on the phone, I would just let the song play. I love this song. This is my man, of course, Tower of Power doing the thing. 2008, of course, this was the Great American Soul Book. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Of course, talking boxing, MMA. The UFC, of course, rocking and rolling. They had a couple of events this week. Nothing, not a whole lot to brag about other than the fact that Justin Gaethje beat Tony Ferguson for the interim lightweight championship, which just means he's lunch meat for Khabib when they rumble. Of course, Khabib being the true lightweight champion of the UFC, the world of mixed martial arts, 24-0, 28-0, 32-0. Socrates says he's 90-0. At the end of the day, nobody's ever beat this guy. And you know what? He doesn't lose rounds in the gym. He trains down here in Cupertino. In Silicon Valley, the American Kickboxing Academy, and he doesn't lose any fight. He doesn't lose rounds in the ring. He's a monster, man. So, I mean, sort of cool. I mean, how can I put this? Justin Gaethje's younger than Tony Ferguson, so he could probably take a little bit more than Tony was going to take. But, you know, you got a guy outweighing you by 20 pounds. That's what's wrong with MMA, maybe, Socrates. Maybe you can weigh in on this, is the fact that Khabib will weigh in at 155, and then he'll come into the octagon at 180 the next day, or 175, and then you got a 180-pound guy laying on top of you instead of a 155-pound guy. It's a whole lot of man there.
Wow, I mean, I know that boxing obviously has that issue at times. Canelo's been accused of it, of the rehydration after the weigh-in. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, I would think that an MMA would – a guy actually physically leaning on you, that's got to be a bigger advantage than it is in boxing.
Yeah.
That doesn't even sound fair.
Yeah. Anyway, props to Justin Gaethje, nice young lightweight. I wish him the best, but against Khabib, he's probably going to get wrecked. Andy Ruiz joins Team Canelo. Larry Merchant said that's a good thing. I just don't think that having Andy Ruiz in boxing at all is good. I just think he represents the worst of boxing, because you've been given an opportunity, and you pull it off, like, whoa, man, I wasn't supposed to be able to do this. So what do? You go out and make sure that you have absolutely no chance to replicate, to do that again in the rematch. I mean, it's sort of like putting a gun to your head and pulling the trigger.
Yeah, I mean, probably the closest comparison to what Andy Ruiz did was what Buster Douglas did. You know, he ate himself into, you know, a slob, and, you know, then before Holyfield, you know, that was it. You know, he threw an uppercut from Cincinnati, and Holyfield saw it, you know, off the exit and clipped him. You know, it was,
Let me give you the Buster Douglas itinerary for the day, okay? We're of course, I'm back in Columbus, Ohio. It's 8 o'clock. The phone rings. Okay, it's John Johnson. Okay, Coach. Well, I'll get together. So I got the limo. So anyway, I go pick up James, of course, champion, James, Buster Douglas. I pick him up first, and I go pick up John Johnson. We go to the office. We're kicking it. We have breakfast. Now, this is about 9 o'clock. We have breakfast. And then about 11 o'clock, we have sort of lunch. And then by 2 o'clock, we have ribs. And then by 5 o'clock, I ain't BSing you, at 5 o'clock we ate again inside the office, and then we went out to dinner at 8:30.
Wow.
So you can see why he got fat.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't believe it, man. So I went back there to run with this dude, okay? I didn't go back there to eat with this dude. I went back there. I bought my running. I was ready to run, bro. And, you know, to go back there, because the idea was I was going to go back there and do some clips of him training for his next fight. And that was going to be the Holyfield fight. And he had no intention of training. The only place he wanted to train was at the buffet. But, back to heavyweights. Anyway, looks like Joshua and Tyson Fury, they're going to make that fight because of the fact that the Deontay Wilder, Tyson Fury, the third fight, it makes no sense for anybody. It makes dollars and cents, maybe, C-E-N-T-S, for Mr. Wilder, but it doesn't for the boxing establishment. So I think they're going to give him a couple million bucks and he'll step aside. Is that the way you see it, too?
I would like to see that happen. There is no need for a third fight against Deontay Wilder. And most people feel that he lost the first time, at best a draw, and he was clearly dismantled in the rematch.
Got knocked down by a body shot.
Yeah. No, he took a whooping. And then all the conspiracy theorists saying that he was hitting him, you know, with a glove that was manipulated and all. Like Steve Cunningham.
There were only two guys I was able to drop with body shots in my entire life in fights. And I remember both of them, and I remember walking away saying, man, I have just conquered you. You know what I mean? When you knock somebody down with a body shot, you have totally you have imposed your will beyond the limits, okay? And that's the way that went down, and that's just the way I see things.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, you know. Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua during normal circumstances, we would have thought, everyone is saying it's going to be a 90,000, 100,000 attendance gate. Can that happen now?
No.
There'll
be nine people at the fight, the officials. Bottom line, yeah, that's just the way it is. Hey, it's going to be, pay-per-view is going to be big. The UFC did 700,000 homes on pay-per-view with that first card they asked last week with Justin Gaethje, UFC 249, of course. And the UFC, you know why the UFC needs to put on these cards, don't you? They just took out a loan for $260 million. They're $2.6 billion in debt.
Wow, didn't know that.
Well, you know, there are certain things you do learn on this show.
Daniel
on occasion.
White didn't talk about that.
Anyway, Dominican Boxing Commissioner Franklin Nunez is in the hospital with the coronavirus. We wish him the best. Of course, a boxing commissioner since 2008. I think I remember him being a boxing writer as well, but we wish him the best.
Yes. He had a talk. He was a sports anchor. I remember him, and I met him a couple of times. So wish him well.
Okay, now speaking of the coronavirus, any bad news on the coronavirus on your end to this week?
Well, things seem to be getting better in New York. My brother, who's a nurse, mm-hmm. he told me that things have gotten very slow in terms of there were not even any patients into the ER. So it seems like things are getting better. You know, people, for the most part, are heeding to social distancing. However, the weather is getting warm. This is a beautiful weekend. I was outside, and people in the park. You know, the weather is going to really play a key part in how people behave. The governor is talking about maintaining the shutdown of the state until possibly June. It's going to be a
challenge
in wills because people are going to have to pay. You know, people are going to pay the price financially. It's something. There has to be a balance somewhere, and I think in my opinion, I'm not saying it's the way, but you're going to do what's best for you. If you feel that you're healthy to go out and resume your normal life, you're going to do so. If not, then stay home. I don't think anyone's going to force you out of your home. But there has to be some sort of balance and rationale because it's 20 million people unemployed, as per the numbers.
True, but when you are you trying to tell me that 5% of the population were willing to sacrifice them in a herd mentality, let the 5% die, let people in your father's age group die because of the fact that we want to move on with the economy? I mean, this is a country in which we just gave zillions, trillions of dollars of tax cuts to corporations and rich people.
No, I know. Listen, like I said, whatever you feel is best for you. If you're in good health, and most normal people, you go out of your house when you need to, whether it be to work, grocery store, the bank, whatnot. Very few people, you know, just go out just to hang out on the side of the street, you know, and, you know, at least adults-wise. You know,
okay. Back to boxing. Dmitry Bivol says he's willing to drop down to 168, of course, 11 KOs, the WB light heavyweight champion for over 2.5 years now. 6 successful defenses. Are people avoiding him? Is that why he's got to move down in weight? Is that why he can't? I mean, he's got 17 fights, got the title, and I don't hear anybody calling him out.
He's not the most exciting fighter to watch. He's like one of those guys that does everything good, nothing great. Him coming down to 168 pounds, I can only see him being weaker. You know, why would he do that? Unless he's already in the process of doing it now. But I don't think it makes any sense. You know, I'm sure that he wants to get paid the big bucks, 168. Canelo's there. Who else? You know, is it worth weakening yourself? I would just stay at light heavyweight and just keep doing my thing. Be the new Virgil Hill or something. You know?
Yeah, but Virgil Hill didn't make any money until he fought Tommy Hearns and only got like one giant payday. You know what I'm trying to say? So that was a long time fighting in Minot, North Dakota against no names. I know I went up there and televised a couple of those events, but yeah, I mean, the Virgil Hill route, it wasn't that profitable.
Yeah, I mean, the money's different, and eventually, you know, the big fight will come for him. But I mean, at light heavyweight, who else would, you know, the better be if that's the fight?
Okay.
Right.
All right. Barry Eddie Hearn wants to part of this Mike Tyson thing. Top rank. Bob Arum wants a piece of this Mike Tyson thing. Oh, and looks like the boxing's coming back to the Dominican Republic. You're going to have a card, I think, on May the 30th. I want to wish them the very best of luck there and hope that they do in invoke some type of social distancing. The last thing we want is people going to an event and getting sick. So hopefully, everybody's wearing masks out here. Are they wearing masks back there too?
Oh, yeah. Even if most of the stores, they'll have the sign. If you don't have a mask, you cannot get in. To take the subways, you have to wear a mask. Most people are wearing masks. The ones that you don't see are the ones that are like teenagers and things like that. But, you know, I would say 90% of the people that you see in the street, they have a mask of some sort.
You know, my homeless guy, I don't know if you saw that or not, but I had me and Scott Cuddy here, we sort of fed a homeless guy for a while, about 8 months around here, around the studio. He was living on Vallejo Street. And last week I saw him, last Thursday, and I called a friend of mine right afterwards, and I told her, I said, you know, just the life is draining out of him. He's dying, this and that. And I remember saying to him half-heartedly, hey, do you want me to call 911? Because he was looking bad, and he told me he didn't answer yes or no. So I just left his food and drove away. Well, 2 days later, Central Station tells me that, you know, they picked up a dead body on Vallejo Street, and obviously that's not good news. But what I'm trying to tell you is that you can sense life. You can sense life, and you can sense death. As a cop, I sensed death when of course, that guy had 4 holes in him. He said to me, you know, I won't say what the word to use, but please tell my kids I love them. And, of course, when Rico Velasquez was in that boxing ring down there in 88 or 89, when I told Hank Alesbrew, after you've been knocked down 6 times, stop the fight, you're going to kill him. He's dying. He's going to die. And then 45 seconds later, Rico Velasquez was dead. So what I'm trying to tell you is I can sort of sense when the Grim Reaper is in the room, and death is unforgiving. It just is. And I think I had to get that off my chest. Bottom line is, at the end of the day, Holmes. I used to call him Holmes. That's all I called him. Hey, Holmes! And we fed him, man. So we wish him the best. And I had to get that in before I let you go. Anyway, Socrates, have a great week. Kiss the wife. Kiss the kid. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
All the
rest of your weekend.
The great Socrates Palmer on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. We'll wrap things up after the break here on Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Show and tell, that's what the USC is doing. They've got these shows going in Jacksonville, Florida. I don't know if they're coming out of the USC Training Center, whatever they're doing. Bottom line is they're putting on fights. Of course, Justin Gaethje defeating Tony Ferguson last week in USC 249. But the real fight on the card, I got to laugh about this, was Francis Ngannou. I told you he was going to stretch this guy. I told you, 20 seconds. He knocked this guy, Jezerano Rosenstruck. He knocked him out in 20 seconds. I told you, that was like lunch meat. If you ever wanted to bet on a fight, that was a fight to bet on. Of course, UFC rock and rolling tonight on ESPN. Alistair Overeem. Alistair Overeem. One time he tested positive for steroids, so I call him Overeem. But take that back, maybe more than once. But Alistair Overeem is going to be in the main event, a heavyweight main event against Walt Harris. Claudia Gardiella is in a women's strawweight battle. It'll be the co-feature against Angela Hill. Edson Barbosa is on the card. Outside of that, I'm not looking at a bunch of names here that I know. But, of course, the UFC is trying to reinvent itself because it needs to reinvent itself, much like the world of professional wrestling, which I'll be delving into tomorrow in depth. I will bring in Hannibal. Most of you people don't know who Hannibal is. I take that back. A lot of you might know who Hannibal is. Of course, he's rocking and rolling on YouTube. He's got one of the biggest YouTube channels going. But he talks pro wrestling, a little boxing, and some MMA as well. And Hannibal will be a major part of hour number two tomorrow on the Sunday edition of Ring Talk Live World right here on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. Of course, Sunday, 11 a.m. Pacific time, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 8 o'clock for my folks in Eloy and the gang down there in Honolulu, Hawaii. But the bottom line is we roll at 11 a.m. Pacific time tomorrow. 2 hours of Ring Talk Live worldwide on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, of course, Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 211, and a plethora of other internet platforms. Bottom line is, we are rocking and rolling on all kinds of platforms. A new one, I'll break it this week, but we've got things, it's called Anchor.com. So we're doing podcasts on Anchor.com as well. So we've got all kinds of things going on. My great producer, Scott Cuddy, puts it together for me. I want to thank him day in and day out. He's been here for me for like 13 years. What more can I say? At the end of the day, I thank you so much for tuning in. Without Ring Talk listeners, there wouldn't be any Ring Talk. Straight up, I thank you so much from the bottom of my heart, because you could be doing a million things right now. And you listen to the Sports Byline Broadcasting with Soul. I thank you from the bottom of my heart. My name is Pedro Fernandez. Don't forget, the Sunday edition, 11 a.m. Pacific time, right here on Sports Byline.